Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks, and Nihei Debiru. Welcome back to Chop Talk. This is your host, Nate England. We are still a few ratings short of showing up on the iTunes rankings. If you listen to the show on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. Today I wrap up my trip to Nashville with an interview with Neil Stinson, who tested for black belt during my trip. We recorded the show the morning after his test as Neil cooked pancakes. Neil starts off talking about how he prepped for the test and how he overcame major knee and ACL injuries in order to keep training in the martial arts. We also discussed Gary Waza, a basic practice form that his teacher, James McLean, developed to improve kicking techniques. At the end of the show, we discuss writing down your kata and other ways to help memorize forms.
So is it a relief now that you're done with the promotion?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was definitely training with that kind of stuff in mind for the past couple months.
Right.
I don't really know if I was doing much training and stuff differently than I would have others, but it's just kind of in the back of your head every time you go in, especially to work out by yourself or with, whether it was just me or Mr. Scott or something like that. That was what we were focused on training for.
All right, you have that deadline coming up. Yeah. Well, you want to make sure that you're representing yourself and you have everything down and look sharp.
And every time I saw Ed C. Sensei for about the past month or two, that's what he would ask me about anything else. You ready? You getting ready? You know,
anything? Since ours is this type of school too, where if you're told you're going to be tested for a promotion, if you show up and halfway make it through, you'll get it. Like, they wouldn't test you if you're not going to get promoted.
So right.
It's not really so much of a fail kind of thing.
You'd have to go out there and embarrass yourself pretty bad or have a nervous breakdown in the middle of it.
It's amazing though. You get up there and you're the only one working out, even though it's guys you worked out with like weekly for years and still anxious and nerve-wracking,
Mm-hmm. You're the guy on the spot. You're the one everybody's looking at, and it's all up to you, and there's nobody else. You know, Richard's not up there, so maybe the sensei's going to look at him half the time. It's all focused on you. That's good. I noticed when I went up, and when I've seen other people go up, it was very similar to you when you started running the katas. And you started to get a little bit winded after the first couple, even though normally you could probably just go out there and run katas all day, but sort of that extra stress, that extra tension, all of a sudden you're only through your second kata and you're sweating, you're tired, you need a break, because that just that sort of pressure adds to the difficulty of doing it.
Yeah, and I think Ezra asked me to do this show. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that in months. Like probably 6 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, at all. I haven't even focused on it. So it's kind of like, I don't remember doing that one. I don't remember doing either one of the katas. Like, I know I just kind of went through them. Was thinking about anything but that, which is kind of amusing too when you think about training for that kind of a process. Because about a year ago, I started thinking about getting ready for that. So I started training myself to be able to go through each one of my katas from one to the last.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much full, like by the end of it, I got to where I could do that full speed, like you would really do it, all of them.
Right.
And I really can. I can do Wansu all the way through to Gopai Sho or Don Insho, the last one I know through, without stopping to catch my breath or take a pause at full speed.
Bow out, bow in, go again.
Yeah, keep going. And I just stop at the mudras and do the next one. But yesterday, did one and like needed a water break. It's not gonna happen. I was wondering though. I was thinking about that last night when I was getting ready to go to sleep. I wondered,
even though that I wasn't really able to do that yesterday, I wondered if it would have made a difference at all had I not been doing that for the past year.
I'm sure I could have made it through the cod once or twice, but I was wondering.
It could have made any difference. That's a good question.
I'm definitely in better shape because of doing that.
Right.
I don't know if it would have been any different doing the test.
Well, I mean, you got a lot more repetitions in training the way you did, and you got in better shape training the way you did. So, I mean, that may have hit you earlier. It may have hit you in the when you did the WAZs, the Epones, Keyhones, Taisu WAZs. Did you work those? You worked those pretty hard, and were a little bit tighter than you normally would have in those. So instead of hitting in the katas, which were a little bit later in the test, they weren't right at the beginning. Man, might have hit there.
Yeah, and I've been trying to train with the katas and stuff like that, especially working out by yourself, and you have to do them all different ways and try to do. Like at one point, I was doing just the show katas in a row, and then taking a pause and doing the rest of them, and then doing them backwards to forwards. And I've tried once a long time ago to do them on the other side, like you were talking about yesterday.
But right.
Doing them in high stance and just relax, like almost like a bunkai kind of a style, versus the fast kind of deeper way, or with, you know, just all different ways. Yeah. Sensei's always been real supportive of that, but when he when he comes out and watches you do it, he wants you to see the regular
way. Well, it's great as a training tool, doing it on the opposite side, because all of a sudden you're working on moves that maybe you've done 1,000 or 10,000 low blocks in Wansu on your left side, but you haven't done any on the right.
Anything to mess your brain up trying to learn that stuff.
Right. Yeah. So it's a mental exercise. It's a physical exercise. One of the things that I did. Thank you. I like to do is, you know, play around with it. Like you said, running it backwards. You can try running it from the last move up to the front, the first move. When I've had leg injuries, I think probably the first time I hurt my hip, I started running it just out of one stance or sitting. So because I couldn't move, I couldn't do any dynamic thing, I couldn't even kick because my leg was so bad. So I just stand in Kiba or Zenkutsu, or the best I could do with my leg, and just run the whole form.
Yeah.
And you get to, you know, work it a little bit different. Work some angles. You kind of find some twists. Oh, I didn't realize you get power by twisting that way.
Yeah. I remember having to do those after knee injuries and stuff, just without being able to torque any part of the body at all. Like pretty much. When I was in that knee immobilizer, I would just be locked from the hips up. I couldn't really twist or bend or do anything to put any kind of torquing force on my knee. So you just have to pretty much stay in there and do it. And I used to go in and do that on the bag too, just like staying there stationary, like not being able to move your feet, hitting the bag, not even being able to hit it so hard because you didn't want it to swing back and hit and knock you out of the way, so you had to shuffle, step backwards even.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be so careful with that kind of stuff.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATEC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATEC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATEC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
So that was a big deal for you, trying to figure out different ways of training with that injury and training through the injury, but not making it worse. Mm-hmm. But that's usually when you can tell the people are going to make it. If they come in and they've just blown out their knee and they're in there the next day trying to figure out what they can do and how they can work around it.
What I could do after that. I was really good at kicking. I could kick really, really strongly, like before the knee, and had to get that stuff back a little bit. But really, it wasn't even the the kicking legs that got diminished. It was the, it'd be the leg you were standing on.
Okay.
I can't, like even now, I really can't lock my knee out to kick with the opposite leg. Mm-hmm. I'd have to keep it slightly bent, and that stuff is very different when you've been doing it one way for 5 years and you have to do it a different way.
Sure. Which leg was it that you hurt?
I tore the ACL on my right knee twice.
Okay.
And then the second time I tore the meniscus, which is a worse injury than just an ACL tear.
That's the sac that holds the muscle, right?
It's like the lining that covers the joints. Okay. So it's like the kind of like the greased lining over the ball bearings. Mm. I got what's called a bucket handle tear. So you have two meniscuses. They look like kind of horse tracks, like big C's faced in on each other. Mm. And the inside one on my right knee, there was a, like the inside most of the C was torn and peeled backwards. Oof. So they call it like a bucket handle, like you could hold that. And I was really lucky he was able to sew it back. He said if I have to trim it off and everything, you'd have a clicking knee and probably just hurt for the rest of your life. Nothing you could do.
But he got it back there.
Yeah, he sewed it back.
So that doesn't bother you anymore. The lingering one is still the ACL with the knee.
It's just stuff I can't do all the time. Like, I don't run. It just hurts. It's kind of pointless. And I'll swim a lot. And also, both times they replace the ACLs, they have a couple different options with where they can get the donated ligament. But if you want to be if you want to return to active sport, and they say, like, pivoting or cutting sports.
And karate qualifies for
karate
that.
Karate would be that, yeah. You can't get a cadaver graft, or you really won't have any snap.
Okay.
So it's either they cut a kind of a trough through your kneecap and then your patella. Ooh. And they take a tendon, piece of your patellar tendon right there and graft the bone plugs in.
Okay.
Or they took a piece of hamstring. Mm. In my case, I didn't really want... I'd seen people with that. You see this big trough scar down the center of their knee and it hurts to even go down on their knee from then on. Uh-huh. And if I could avoid it, my logic at the time was if I can avoid it, I'd rather not have holes drilled in my femur and in my
that makes sense.
Tibia. So I had them take the hamstring. Mm-hmm. On the right, that wasn't such a big deal because I already had the knee, so it's already kind of a special leg.
Right.
The second time, he took one of the three hamstrings out of my left knee. My left leg. Oof. So I'm missing a hamstring in both legs, too.
Now, when you say missing the hamstring, that's a chunk of it like it would be in the mm-hmm. front, right?
Mm-hmm. You got three in each leg.
Okay.
Two on the inside, one on the outside, and they kind of lace the knees.
Okay.
And both times he took a big graft of the inner one. So I have two or three. That really just is affected. I've noticed for like a couple years there, we could be working out for like first hour, my hamstrings just be really, really tight. And we'd just be bouncing around, standing around, sparring. Mm-hmm. And they just seize up, just be really tight. And have to like stop and kind of, as you're bouncing in your stretches, stances a little bit, stretch out. And like the snap back of a front kick. Mm-hmm. There's not a whole lot of snap anymore. It just doesn't have the same contractile strength as you do with three.
Right.
And really, lately, past year or two, I've still been dealing with a lot of muscle recovery in my right quad. There's this all that moving of stuff around and reconnecting everything. And then the orthopod told me this. He's like, this is going to shred your lat, completely destroy it. And that's why all the rehab really is for the strength of the muscles. Mm-hmm. If I don't just do right by it, I can wake up in the middle of the night with like a Charlie horse that will take 20 minutes to walk around the house before it goes away.
Wow.
Like just my right thigh just seized up. And about a day after that, it'll just be really, really painfully sore from that.
So you've had to learn how to avoid whatever it is that triggers that.
Yeah, usually it's just working out too hard and not, if I take a vitamin or something like that, I think it's better. That stuff has been wild though. Having to figure out how to rebuild that muscle. Because every once in a while, even in karate and stuff, we'll be doing something. Even now, it's like, oh, I just refound where that muscle is missing. I'll have to do that for a while.
My hamstring got torn up from the other end. I was doing a side kick, hamstring contracted at the end of it, and where it connects to the pelvis, that loop of bone that goes down, it pulled all the bone out of there where it connected.
It separated.
Yeah. I think they called it like a hurdler's tear. Huh. There's a lot of people that do the hurdles will get that sometimes. And they never put it back.
How's that affected stuff?
It was really, it was horrible when, after it happened, and I didn't know what I'd be able to do. And I probably pulled that in June, and then I tried out for the soccer team in August or September, which wasn't a great idea. But it really affected my running. I had this really weird gait in my run, where my right leg kind of looped down and out. But now it doesn't really affect me. I've got an extra lump in my butt.
Yeah.
And if I pull it back hard, sometimes I can feel something, or I'll get a little twinge. But for the most part, that one really hasn't affected the way I work out or walk or anything like that, luckily.
That was when you were a kid.
I was, I think, 16.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.
It's given me a new respect, too, for a lot of news on pro athletes. Like, I was listening to something a couple months ago about, Chicago Bulls, the Derrick Rose guy.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's just shredded his knees over his career. He's had both knees repaired, like torn meniscuses repaired and stuff on both knees.
And he's not that old of a guy, right? He's still...
No, he's a young... I mean, relatively speaking, he's a young guy. Had his whole, like a lot of career left.
Yeah.
But I heard a conference of him talking about, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get back out there and we're going to make a run at this and that. And it was just kind of like, I mean, I don't discount anybody's freakish athletic ability, but if you've torn both meniscuses and your both knees, you're not going to be the same.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. You know, yeah. No matter what kind of therapy you go through, it's going to be different. Like, you won't be. Unless you wouldn't be any less or great than you were before, but I can't imagine you played basketball any better.
Hmm.
I really take care of them too. Like every time not so long after all that stuff, I was doing kicking drills on a pad by myself one day, or on the large bag by myself one day. And it's kind of like yesterday at the test, since they asked me to do like a spin side kick. He really likes that back spin side kick.
Yeah.
And I did it once or twice and like went right over. I was like, this is not, I don't have.
You didn't have that stability in the base.
Yeah. Leg. If I plant on my right foot and spin around and kick with the left, I just can't snap back. Like, I'm going to go all the way through, and the kick probably won't be all that strong. Hmm. But I can do, like, the spinning back hook kind of thing. And where I don't have to lock out that planting leg, you can kind of just have it bent a little bit and coiled.
Mm-hmm.
And you use the... because usually that hook, you know, it's almost like the very bottom of your foot that you're making contact with at a circular angle, like you might with a roundhouse.
Right.
And you can use that to bounce right back off, like kick.
Okay.
Kick off with your foot and come right back around. It's a little bit easier to hide the fact that you can't stop and spin back around.
So you mask it. So if you don't tell anybody, nobody knows.
Well, just things like that. And, you know, Ezra was telling me one time he got a new gi or something. And he didn't want the bottom because he doesn't like the... bell bottom looking like the wide leg.
Oh, that's awesome. That's my favorite.
Yeah,
I want to get a bell bottom gi that's red, white, and blue. I'll just wear that to the dojo every day.
He likes the He likes the tapered legs, like jiu-jitsu style pants.
Ezra loves his jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, well, I took the pants. I was like, I don't mind taking those baggy, large pant legs. It hides the fact that my knees are bent a lot of the time when I'm doing some of those kicks. Mm-hmm. You can't tell, you know?
Yeah.
It took me a long time to, like, do that without coming up on my toe to hide that, but that's not all that good either. And really, the thing that saved my ass in a lot of that stuff was the Gary Waza. He used to... before my knee surgeries and during rehab, I would do it with ankle weights.
Okay.
I'd do Gary Waza really, really slow with ankle weights to where you're holding every technique out for 5 seconds.
So, because you're doing so many kicks, different types of kicks, and the way you normally run it is doing those in super slow motion and holding it. It's really a conditioning exercise for the leg.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. Like, a lot of the times I did karate because I didn't like going to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that other stuff to keep in shape, you know, that you have to do when you get a little bit older is just incredibly boring to me.
Yeah.
I never liked going to the gym anyway. But that stuff is, it's different when you're doing an exercise and training to get better at something, to progress and like to learn the art and the style and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot easier to do rehab doing Gary Waza with ankle weights rather than just sit there and do 40 on each leg.
Absolutely. Stretch. You know, and that's the thing I found even with, running on a treadmill, with lifting weights, with doing the exercise bike, any of that where you're in the gym, it gets boring.
Yeah.
Because you're not really doing anything. You're sitting there and exercising. So that's why I like karate, because you're getting a workout, but you're also doing something productive also. Whether it's learning to defend yourself or getting in shape or working on a technique, you're working on something else other than just this one muscle.
Yeah. Well, and there's only so much curling of a dumbbell where the you got the technique, like, that's it.
Okay. Right.
You got the form and the posture and everything like that really well. Now do that 400 or 500 times a day for the next 20 years, and maybe you'll have something. You know,
right.
What are you going to have? A bigger muscle. That's about it.
Right.
Like, there's not a whole lot of art form in doing, or even like treadmills, even honestly going to the gym, like I'm again living close to the YMCA really saved my butt in rehab, because we could go right down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they had childcare and stuff like that too. It was very convenient, but that's the only reason I'd go into a gym. Just boring, and everybody's looking around, you know, and people go in there to like look at themselves, do it in the mirror. It's just I never liked that whole the whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
And even the people that, especially at Community Wise or something like that, there's people that take that as the opportunity for their social interactions. They want to go and get on a machine for like 3 sets and then come over and talk to the guy while he's doing his sets for another hour.
It's just as much of a social interaction as it is a workout.
Yeah, and I think I was reading something about bodybuilding, or just kind of reading up on some stuff when I was lifting weights, and I came across the little segment on the cellar dweller. I'm a cellar dweller.
Okay.
I'm somebody who would prefer to do it with a weight bench in their basement by themselves.
Yeah.
Kind of in the dark.
Yeah, I'm the same as you.
Because I never minded the mirrors in the weight room that we got, but when I did lift weights, I was working nights at the hospital. So a lot of times I would go in there on my night off at 1 a.m, like after my family went to sleep, I'd show up at midnight and go in there for a couple hours and go home. So otherwise, just be sitting at the house bored by myself, everybody asleep.
Mm.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA, PubPalUSA.
But yeah, I used to do Gary Waza with ankle weights a lot.
It'd be a real good exercise. I want to work that with the guys when I get back. I taught it to Joe. I think it was right after the first time that Travis and I came down. I went back, and Joe probably started right about that time or the week after. Something like that. I'm like, I just learned this kata. Let me teach it to you because I want to work it. So I worked it with him, and Travis has done it. And then Richard demonstrated it a couple of times while he was up there. Yeah, and some of the guys, oh, I like that. That looks like a good drill. So maybe we'll try to work that a little bit. And then when one of you guys comes up, you can stand in the corner and tell us what we're doing wrong.
Well, and then if you do two, you can kind of do this with one, but two, especially, you can do it a little bit in the line like that. Like that classic I-shaped Imbusin. You
right.
Kind of do them up. You have to add a kick or two, and the Gary was a one, but you can add a kick or two and go up the line with it, then turn to the one side, turn to the other, then come back down. Like, we do it just standing there on both sides, but that's what the other side of it would be.
Okay.
Coming, facing the other directions.
Now, spinning around and doing it. Now, doing it on the opposite side.
Coming back.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the Kagami.
That kind of stuff. Well, in Gary Waza 2, it's a little bit easier. There's a part where you know, you do the classic, like, attack to the front, attack to your right, attack to your left, and then you're back to your first direction. And you do two round kicks, but usually we step back to where we were. You can just step up doing the round kicks. And then you spin and do the other attack to the left, other attack to the right, and then you start over. You go back the other direction. I found something like that. You know, in those notes of senseis I went through when he was in the hospital and stuff and scanned, I found where one of his students had written out Gary Waza 4 and 5.
Really?
But they're the same.
Okay.
So it's a mistake. It's somebody's homework, but it was a mistake.
Okay.
They wrote down the same thing.
Okay.
And wrote Gary Waza 4 on one page and Gary Waza 5 on the other.
Okay.
But they do that. Like, it doesn't make any sense trying to interpret some student's homework of the Waza.
Right.
To do it like that person had written it out, you would have to do it in a line. And I asked Sensei about that one time. He didn't really have much to say about it. He's like, I don't know what that is.
I've only ever seen two, one and two. But there's three. You guys have worked three, or there's a mystical three that's out there somewhere that you don't know, that you've never seen?
No, three is one and two together.
Okay, and then four.
That's the big secret.
Okay, there we go. And then four is...
Four is just kind of weird sounding, and it sounds like a whole lot of the same stuff, but instead of a front kick and a side kick and a roundhouse kick, it's a stomp kick and a crescent kick, and just the kicks change.
Okay.
Not exactly the same steps and directions and sequence and stuff like that, but the kicks are just different. There's a lot of, and that, again, that could have been the, that student, I don't know how good a student that was, but it could have been their homework. Maybe they were just writing stuff out or making stuff up.
Right.
And for all I know, also, that could have just been somebody writing out what their Gigi Undo would be.
Right.
And calling it Gary Waza 4 or something like that.
It's
like, what do you think putting this in the system? He's like, I don't know, but I'll put that in my files. There was a lot of that kind of stuff. I found, you know, where he had had somebody write out a training exercise over and over and over. You know, 20 different people's handwriting are the same thing. Like, this must have been somebody's write-offs or their homework or what they had to do to get their yellow belt or something.
I found that to be a good exercise when you try to memorize kata. If you learn a new kata and you go over it and over it and over it when you learn it the first time in the dojo, and then go home and sit down and try to write out what the steps were, it really helps to solidify that in your brain.
That stuff helped me too, to trying to write that kind of thing down, to have a good relation to when you're trying to read someone else's, like in the book or something, and you're trying to read it to decipher it. You realize that what the challenge of trying to describe that stuff when you try to write it down for yourself, it's not easy to orient every direction or everything by the word. What does this mean? This one person might mean different than another.
Absolutely. All right, well, I appreciate the pancakes and the hospitality. And congratulations again.
Thanks so much. Thanks for
coming. The black belt. Hey, my pleasure.
That's all for this week's show and my trip to Nashville. Thanks to everyone for their hospitality while I was in town, and congratulations again to Neil for earning his black belt. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Nihe de biru and mate ya. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, coworker, everyone at your dojo. your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.